1:00 a.m. on Wednesday, April 27, 2022. Present today are Vice Chair Ortiz, myself, Co-Chair Merrick. This morning, we will consider Senate Bill 222, Physical and Occupational Therapy Board, and House Bill 183, Criminal Justice Data Analysis Commission. We've been joined by Representative Josephson as well. First up is Senate Bill 222, Extend Physical Therapy and Occupational Therapy Board by Senator Gray Jackson. We last heard this bill on April 20, and amendments were due to my office yesterday, and we received no amendments. Let the record reflect, at 9:02 a.m., we're joined by Representative Lavon. I do not see Senator Gray Jackson with us, so we will forego opening comments. With that, I'm going to open public testimony on Senate Bill 222. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Is there anyone online? Seeing none, we will close public testimony on Senate Bill 222. Let the record reflect, at 9:02 a.m., we were joined by Representative Thompson. It looks like we have Glenn Hoskinson with the Deputy Director of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing. He is online to go over the fiscal note. It's Ms. Hoskinson, I apologize. Control code VYTUN. Ms. Hoskinson, are you there?
Good morning, Madam Chair. Yes, ma'am, I'm here.
Great, thank you. Can you review the fiscal note briefly? Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. To the Chair, Senate Bill, sorry, for the record, this is Glenn Hoskinson, Deputy Director of the Division of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing. Because Senate Bill 222 extends the statutory authority for the existing State Physical Therapy and Occupational Therapy Board, what our fiscal note shows is the costs to operate the board. So this covers their costs for the 7 board members and 1 staff member to attend 4 board meetings per year. That's the $26.9 in travel costs. And then the services costs cover advertising to public notice board meetings, trainings and conference fees, and stipends for board members attending board meetings in their communities of residence. So basically what you're seeing here is that the cost that we have right now, this is not the cost to run the program, because the physical and occupational therapy licensing program would continue whether the board was extended or not. But this is the cost to extend the board itself and how the operational costs for the board.
Great, thank you very much. Are there questions regarding the fiscal note? Seeing none, thank you so much for being with us today. With that, we'll take a brief at ease. House Finance on the record at 9:04 a.m. Is there any further questions, comments on Senate Bill 222? Seeing none, Mr. Co-Chair?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 222, version 32-LS1593/A, from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note, and authorize legislative legal services to make conforming changes.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, Senate Bill 222 is moved from committee. Brief at ease. House Finance on the record at 9.06 a.m. And let the record reflect at 9.03 a.m. we were joined by Representatives Wohl, Rasmussen, Carpenter, and Co-Chair Foster. Next on our agenda is an introduction of House Bill 183, Criminal Justice Data Analysis Commission, by Representative Klayman. Welcome, Representative. If you could put yourself on the record and begin your presentation. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Matt Klayman. I'm the state representative from House District 21 in West Anchorage. First, I want to thank you all for hearing House Bill 183 this morning. The Alaska Criminal Justice Commission sunset on June 30th, 2021, and will conclude its affairs no later than June 30th, 2022. In accordance with the recommendation of the legislative auditor, rather than extend the commission in its current form, House Bill 183 maintains the commission's data collection and analysis function and substantially reduces its recommendations function. House Bill 183 accomplishes the following. First, it establishes the Alaska Criminal Justice Data Analysis Commission in place of the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission. Second, it modifies the membership of the commission. Third, it amends and restates the powers and duties of the commission. And finally, it extends the termination date of the Alaska Criminal Justice Data Analysis Commission to June 30, 2029. Data analysis, research, and reporting are all aspects of Alaska's criminal justice system and is essential to our work as policymakers. Research and analysis about our criminal justice system, including state laws, public safety, rehabilitation, crime and incarceration rates, the needs of victims, and the factors set forth in the Alaska Constitution are all important, and HB 183 makes sure they will continue. For example, the Commission recently published a 2022 report on domestic violence in Alaska. The report takes an in-depth look at the prevalence, state response, and best policy practice in the United States. No one should underestimate the importance of doing better in Alaska when it comes to preventing domestic violence and supporting victims. In 2019, the Commission completed a sex offenses report to the Alaska State Legislature that provides an overview on the data, research, law, and policies relating to sex offenses in Alaska. The report presented data on sex offenses and how sex offense cases are processed, explains the sentencing law for sex offenses, provides an overview of sex offender treatment and reentry, and looks at the challenges victims face and the services available to them. Finally, back in 2015, when the commission first started meeting, pretrial release was identified as an important area of concern. The commission directed the Alaska Judicial Council to gather data about current bail and pretrial release practices. This information had never before been collected, and some of the results were surprising. For example, in 2005, pretrial inmates comprised 20% of the population, and in 2015, that had grown to 28%. Alaska's pretrial population had grown by 81% from 2005 to 2015, driven primarily by longer lengths of stay for both felony and misdemeanor defendants at pretrial. The Commission's experience over the past 6 years has shown that effective criminal justice data collection and analysis is valuable and essential to the public policymakers, to the public, and to practitioners. House Bill 183 allows for those data collection and analysis functions to continue and continue under a successor commission. And with that, I'll pass you off to Lizzie Kubitz from my staff, who can walk you through the sectional analysis.
Thank you, Ms. Kubitz.
Thank you. Good morning. For the record, my name is Lizzie Kubitz, and I'm staff to Representative Klayman. Section 1 of House Bill 183 relates to staff and support for the commission and adds the word data analysis to the name of the former commission. Section 2 adds a new section relating to the Alaska Judicial Council's duty to design and implement a project for the purposes of studying risk factors related to criminal activity should the newly formed Alaska Criminal Justice Data Analysis Commission sunset on June 30th, 2029. The Alaska Judicial Council must prepare an annual report summarizing the information collected. Section 3 adds the word data analysis to the name of the commission. Section 4 makes changes to the membership of the commission. These changes include the following. First, it ensures representation of rural Alaska on the commission, makes the Deputy Attorney General for the Criminal Division of the Department of Law or their designee a voting member rather than the Attorney General, allows the public defender's designee to act as a voting member in place of the public defender, places two peace officer representatives on the commission rather than one municipal law enforcement representative. One representative would represent a rural community off the road system, and one representing an urban community, both appointed by the Alaska Chiefs of Police. Next, provides for the victim's rights advocate on the commission to be appointed by the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault after consultation with its member and partner organizations. Next, makes the commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Services a voting member, and finally, creates a new member seat for a formerly incarcerated person who has completed his or her sentence. Section 5 removes the duties of the former Alaska Criminal Justice Commission to be replaced by the new duties of the Alaska Criminal Justice Data Analysis Commission. These new duties include data analysis, research, and reporting on all aspects of Alaska's criminal justice system, including state laws, public safety, rehabilitation, crime and incarceration rates, the needs of victims, and other factors set forth in the Alaska Constitution. The commission would receive data related to the criminal justice system from the Alaska Department of Corrections, Department of Public Safety, Department of Law, and the Alaska court system. The commission would identify areas for improving the efficiency and effectiveness of the criminal justice system. It would recommend expenditures from the Recidivism Reduction Fund. It would make other recommendations and provide analysis if requested by the legislature, the executive, or the judiciary. And finally, the commission would issue an annual report. Section 6 adds a new subsection to the enabling statutes related to the commission's duty to design and implement a project for the purposes of studying risk factors related to criminal activity. This new subsection I is substantially identical to the former subsection H, which was repealed on July 1st, 2021 upon the sunset of the former commission, which is currently in its wind-up year. The Alaska Judicial Council is currently performing these functions pursuant to AS 2220-220. Section 7 removes the duty of the commission to make recommendations and adds the duty of conducting research and adopting a research agenda and priorities based on Article 1, Sections 7, 12, and 24 of the Constitution of the State of Alaska, which relates to due process, criminal administration, and the rights of crime victims. Those sections also mention other issues of pressing concern to the criminal justice system. Sections 8 and 9 remove the reporting responsibilities of the former commission to be replaced by the new duties of the Alaska Criminal Justice Data Analysis Commission. The commission's reporting responsibilities are related to the duties of the commission previously mentioned in Section 5. Section 10 adds a new subsection to the enabling statutes specifying that the commission must prepare an annual report summarizing the information collected in Section 6. Section 11 updates the definitions of commission, recidivism, and technical violation. Section 12 adds the Alaska Criminal Justice Data Analysis Commission to the list of boards and commissions set to expire. Section 13 adds data analysis to the name of the commission. Section 14 contains repealers that relate to the establishment of the former commission. Section 15 contains repealers that relate to the establishment of the new commission. These statutes are set to repeal on June 30th, 2029, to be repealed on June 30th, 2029. Section 16 specifies that a person who is a member of the former commission on the day before the effective date of this act continues to serve on the Alaska Criminal Justice Data Analysis Commission until the expiration of the member's term. Section 17 contains transition language regarding the Alaska Judicial Council's duty to design and implement a project for the purposes of studying risk factors. And finally, sections 18 and 19 relate to effective dates. Thank you for the opportunity to walk you through the bill. If possible, I'd like to pass it over to Chris Curtis, Legislative Auditor, Legislative Audit Division, and ask that committee members hear her testimony related to the audit. Thank you, Ms. Kubitz. And let the record reflect at 9:07 a.m. we were joined by Representative Johnson. So we have Chris Curtis, Legislative Auditor, with us this morning.
Co-chair.
Representative Laban.
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Are we going to hear or allowed to ask questions regarding the sectional, or do you want to wait till after we hear from the auditor?
Why don't we wait till we hear from the auditor?
Thank you.
Just because she's here. I'm sure she'll answer all your questions.
Good morning. For the record, Chris Curtis, Legislative Auditor. The Division of Legislative Audit conducted an audit of the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission. It's dated June of 2020. I believe you have a copy of it in your meeting packets. So the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission was established back in 2014 as a result of Senate Bill 64. Senate Bill 64 was the result of a bipartisan effort to reduce the high cost of correction and reduce the prison populations and recidivism through evidence-based reforms. The commission was given a three-year term ending June of 2017. Now, state leaders tasked the commission with developing evidence-based recommendations aimed at safely controlling prison and jail populations and recalibrating the correctional investment to ensure the state received the highest possible public safety return on state dollars. Additionally, due to the declining state operating budgets, legislative leaders requested the commission forward policy options that would avert future prison growth and reduce the prison populations between 15% and 25%. So over a seven-month period, this commission analyzed the state's criminal justice system, including a comprehensive review of sentencing, corrections, and community supervision data. And based on this analysis, the commission developed 21 evidence-based recommendations known as the December 2015 Justice Reinvestment Report. And many of the recommendations in this Justice Reinvestment Report became the basis for criminal justice laws passed as part of Senate Bill 91. Now, that law was signed back in July of 2016, and it extended this commission's termination date to June of 2021. It substantially changed or expanded the commission's duties, and it directed the commission to oversee the implementation of criminal justice reform and reinvestment. So many of you know that many of the reforms contained in Senate Bill 91 were blamed for an increase in crime. In subsequent legislation, amended or repealed most of the provisions of Senate Bill 91. So the report conclusions begin on page 7, and we conclude that overall the audit found that the commission met its statutory responsibilities by analyzing the effects of sentencing laws and criminal justice practices on the criminal justice system and making recommending improvements. Additionally, the commission conducted specific studies and produced reports as required by statutes. So, you know, in the big picture, this commission was very active and it operated fairly efficiently, and I was really impressed by the amount of work it produced in such a short time. We found the commission was effective as an advisory agency from 2015 through 2017, and its recommendations served as a basis for comprehensive criminal justice reform. However, beginning in 2018, criminal justice policy decisions were not rooted in the Criminal Justice Commission's recommendations, and their effectiveness as an advisory agency began to wane, and it did not produce recommendations in 2019. Although the commission did not routinely recommend improvements after 2017, it did continue to analyze criminal justice data and evaluate the impact of commission recommendations and other changes on the criminal justice system. So we did not recommend extending the commission's termination date. Rather than extend the commission in its current form, we recommended that the need for and expectations of a criminal justice advisory commission be reevaluated. Although we recommended sunsetting the commission, we did not recommend terminating its data collection and analysis functions. Objective evidence regarding the effectiveness of criminal justice system and laws governing the system are critical to future policy decisions. We noted that legislation would be required in order to maintain the data collection and analysis functions of the commission if the commission were allowed to sunset. It appears it's being allowed to sunset.
Representative Wolf?
I believe Representative Bond might be ahead of me in the queue, but I have questions.
Are the questions for Ms. Curtis and the audit?
was for the bill sponsor on my part.
Okay. Representative Laban.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess on the sectional, I was going to ask a question of the bill sponsor regarding Section 4. Tell me about creating a new member seat for a formerly incarcerated person who has completed his or her sentence. What's your vision on that selection? Who appoints it, or how does that process work?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Laban, in the discussions that took place in terms of how to come up with this, there were discussions within the commission about seeing the auditor's recommendation about, okay, we don't want to have the commission making recommendations anymore. It's more a data analysis. And in those discussions, listening to public comment, one of the most frequent comments was there was no one on the commission that had what we call learned experience that could actually say, well, I actually served in jail and this is kind of what we face coming out. And they thought that should be important. And so the appointment on that would be made, it had to be made collaboratively by the Deputy Attorney General on the Criminal Division and the Public Defender. They would have to identify a person who had completely finished their sentence, not just their jail time, but finished their parole and probation, so they were totally done with the criminal justice system. And then the Chief Prosecutor and the Chief Defense Attorney in the state would have to agree that the person was appropriate. And now those two would pick somebody, and then they would have a seat on the commission.
Representative Laban.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that selection would not be subject to any confirmation by the governor or anybody else. They would just agree on who that individual should be. And would that member have full voting rights?
Yes. Through the chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess continue that line of questioning, and you answered one of the questions, but they have to be fully removed from any kind of state supervision, which means years probably after they're released, I'm guessing, unless it's a minor charge. I mean, most people that go to jail and spend years in jail then spend probably at least that much time, depending on the circumstances, in state supervision. And I'm just sort of speaking anecdotally, but I know that state supervision can go on for many, many years.
Through the chair, Representative, well, the proposed statute does not distinguish between whether they're convicted of a misdemeanor or a felony. My prediction is that the person that would likely be appointed would be somebody that probably had been convicted of a felony, but probably not somebody that had been served at 30-plus year sentence and had 10 years of probation. It would probably be somebody that had a comparatively shorter time. So I think you're right that some sentences go on for years, but I think there's others that people complete their obligations in a period of 5 years or less.
Follow-up?
Yeah. Was there any talk about having a family member of an incarcerated person, someone that's dealing with the criminal justice system currently, and their current conditions, because a lot of stuff changes quickly in the criminal justice world, as some of us who've been here just a few short years can testify to.
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, there were a lot of folks that had a lot of interest in having a seat on the commission, and the recommendations that were discussed from the public testimony, there was also an effort to try not to make it a 35-member commission. So I think the sense from the public testimony was that having a person that had actually served time would be more illuminating to the process than a family member.
Yes, Representative.
Another Paul. Question for Ms. Curtis. She said several times, we, I'm assuming the auditor group, based on, what's happened with SB 91 and the recommendations that were made by the commission, subsequently adopted in a bill and then repealed through other bills, and a lot of political motivation said that we decided not to include recommendations. That was a decision at your department. Or maybe you can illuminate that. You said we decided not to include recommendations as part of their functions. Can you elaborate on that?
Representative Wolf, through the chair, actually that was a comment by Representative Klayman. So what we stated that we believe that the need for and expectations of a criminal justice advisory commission should be reevaluated. You know, what should they do? What should their purpose be? How should they operate? Just a step back, given that when we were reviewing the commission, they weren't being really looked to in an advisory capacity as they had in previous years. So rather than extend them in their current form, we're just like, we should probably pause this, have policymakers reevaluate the commission, decide is there a different need now that everyone's gone through this SB 91 repeal, and they is there a different direction? Do they want them to make recommendations or not? Actually, I didn't really think about the recommendations. I just knew that at this point, in its current form, I couldn't really recommend extending them. And it really, biggest thing we really wanted to see go forward was the data collection analysis. And if policymakers looked at this commission and said, yeah, we still want it to be this way, I kind of needed that guidance at this point. Or if they wanted to make some tweaks to it and whatnot, which is, I think, what we're here for today, it was time to take a pause and reevaluate.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Kutcher. So I guess what you're saying is because they stopped doing recommendations for a period, then you evaluated and said, well, they're not doing recommendations. Maybe we should not continue this board with these current sets of functions.
Through the chair, it was actually they weren't being policy decisions were being made that were not rooted in what the commission was saying. So it's like, well, are they an effective advisory committee? You know, so at that point, it was important for the policymakers as a group to say yay or nay, or let's tweak them. Let's tweak the representation, or let's tweak the process at this time.
So if in its current form of just data analysis, they're going to have to analyze data and then give a summary, I suppose, what analysis is. We faced a prison situation where we had to either build more prisons or reform the system. I think we're back at opening prisons up, and probably we'll need to build more at the current rate we're going. So this is a question for you or the bill sponsor. Assuming we're at the current rate of incarceration and length of incarceration, will the commission then be tasked with, like, what do we do now question, which I guess would involve recommendations, or is we just going to leave it up to policymakers to use their own skill set of looking at data and coming up with a solution? Because things like criminal justice get very politicized, as we all know, and sometimes the most data-driven logical decision isn't always made. So I don't know. Do you foresee that situation coming up in the near future? And that's for you first, and then I guess the bill sponsor.
Representative Wool, what should be done in the future, I'm not going to weigh in on. I can only look back to my audit function, looking back at how what happened from 2014 on till the time we did the audit, and what I thought there was a need to evaluate, and which I think is happening right now. I certainly regard the need to continue to analyze and provide good information to policymakers, because there's a lot of decisions to be made in the future. You got prisons that are in need of maintenance or being rebuilt, or you've got a lot of problems with the populations. You've got so many issues right now out there, and you need good objective data, and you need experts to be evaluating that data and providing that for information. So whether you want an also recommendation function, I think that would be very reasonable. I think having a body provide policymakers recommendations is why you have advisory commissions created in the first place. Whether you want them to continue in this form, I could not recommend extending them in that form, because I saw they weren't being used. But that is certainly something policymakers could decide amongst yourselves, that you want to continue them in their current form by proposing a bill to extend them. Or you take a look at this bill or some other bill, but as far as weighing in on exactly how it should be done, since I'll have to come out and audit it, I wouldn't even be independent at that point. That would impair my independence. I couldn't even probably evaluate it at that point.
Last point.
I actually have a follow-up on that.
Representative Klayman.
Through the chair, Representative Wolf. The recommendation from the audit was very clear from my perspective that the data and analysis function should continue because there's a level of detailed data and analysis that if you just sort of say, oh, let's get some information on that and find somebody to do it, it could take a couple of years before you meaningfully get that information back. The audit was very specific about saying they didn't think the recommendation function should continue, and so the bill proposes that there's only one place the bill suggests that recommendations continue, and that's how to spend money from the recidivism reduction fund, which is from marijuana tax money. That's the only recommendation that's suggested continues. And if there's a recommendation, the legislature would actually have to say, send a note or a message to the Criminal Justice, we want a recommendation about this topic. The commission would absolutely lack power to make any recommendations except as to spending from the recidivism reduction fund. Unless there was a specific request from the legislature, there would be no recommendations. So the notion that because things have changed, that wouldn't lead, the difference would be there might be research that might be useful that would help policymakers make wise decisions, and hopefully that's what would come out of the commission, but you wouldn't see recommendations in that last point.
Yes,
I guess two things. Commission stopped making recommendations, I'm guessing for political reasons, because they got caught in the crosshairs of SB 91 wars. We hear bills constantly appear with task forces and working groups, and we just did two recently, broadband and marijuana task force. We all have the fiscal policy working group. They're all going to come up with recommendations. We don't have to take them, but we put a group of people together that we think have knowledge and come up with a process, and they discuss stuff off to the side with all kinds of data and analysis, and then they say, here's what we think. So it just seems strange to take that function away. We don't have to follow their recommendations, but it just seems it's like you're leading them right up to the water and saying, don't take a drink yet until we tell you to, but that's just my thought.
Through the chair, Representative Wolf, the difference between those task forces is that they're temporary. So this was put in with a three-year term originally back in 2014 to do just that, to produce some information to go forward. And then Senate Bill 91 extended them to 2021 and gave them a whole bigger broad to basically oversee criminal justice reform and reinvestment. So that guidance, now that Senate Bill 91 went away, basically, what is the vision for this group? Now it's actually put in statute and it's subject to the sunset process. And the sunset process determines whether there's a need for its continued existence. Is it serving the public's interest and there's a need for its continued existence for another 8 years or 5 years? So it's like, well, I didn't see the need for it in its current form. You know, it does, if you look at the how it's organized, there is a lot of positions that come from the administration on the board, and politically that might impact its effectiveness. Should you take a pause and reevaluate? I believe you should, and of course that's what you're doing right now.
Great, thank you. Representative Klayman?
On that topic, I think it's important to note that in the last 3 or 4 years after Senate Bill 91 was enacted, and then there was a lot of discussion and debate and a lot of changes made and rollback of a lot of it, the commission has been making a number of recommendations, and frankly, the legislature hasn't taken up any of them. It wasn't as if there's what Ms. Curtis correctly notes is that a lot of the decisions made by the legislature weren't based on some of the data and analysis that had been earlier provided by the commission, but there were other recommendations that were made that weren't really related to that the legislature wasn't interested in. So there's a reality that the legislature has shown that they're not interested in the recommendation, but what I've seen is when people learn about some of the analysis they've done, people are, oh, that's actually pretty helpful.
Great, thank you. We have Representatives Josephson, Ortiz, Johnson, and Carpenter. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair for Representative Clayton, there's a letter from former Chief of Staff Ben Stevens, and in it he notes that nearly half of the Commission's prior recommendations have been repealed, and I assume that's mostly relating to SB 91, but that suggests that half of the Commission's recommendations have not been repealed. Do you know what he's referring to? Substantively, he seems to say there's a lot of content the Commission recommended that's in law. I'm just curious what he's referring to.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, there are a lot of the things are still part of the law, and those were changes. So people talk about repeal of Senate Bill 91, but there's a lot of parts of Senate Bill 91 that were not repealed, because when looking at the changes, people recognize some of those were useful changes, and they are part of the law today. I mean, a perfect example was Senate Bill 91 actually increased the minimum sentence for first-degree murder. And I've never heard anybody say that we should go back to the old minimum sentence for first-degree murder. And somebody would say, well, what? Didn't you repeal the whole thing? I said, well, did you think we should repeal the first degree? No one wanted to repeal that.
Ms. Curtis?
I just thank you, Chair. I just wanted to point out Appendix C in the audit. Page 31 includes incredible amount of detail of all the work that the Commission's done, and it is an incredible amount of work. And we take it through whether their action has been taken on that information, and then whether there's been any amendments or appealing to those actions. So a lot of information for policymakers on just kind of what happened with the recommendations.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Chair, Representative Clayton, the only part of this that really caught my attention was Section 11, but I think I just need a little comment on it. Section 11 arguably is the part that creates a little bit of substantive law by defining, for example, technical violation, which was a term I think unfamiliar to the law until SB 91. And I recall when I was studying SB 91 6 years ago, that term was used and it was undefined, and no one seemed to want to define it. But it is there, and I see that it only applies to Title 44, so it's a narrow definition. Is there a competing definition of technical violation in Title 11 or 12? Do you know?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I don't believe there is. The reason for both the technical violation definition and the recidivism definition in Section 11 of the bill is directed at in terms of the research and analysis function, so that there's a consistent definition that gets applied, so that you don't get in a setting in which, oh, we got a report this year and this was the definition of technical violation, and then 3 years later there's another report and somebody says, well, you can go back to the statute. The discussions are actually much more robust about the definition of recidivism, and so again, this definition was worked with through corrections and the folks at UAA and others to get to a consistent definition of recidivism that could be applied for data reporting in data and analysis.
Yes.
So just to assuage me, the definition of technical violation, there's not going to be any courtroom discussion about, Your Honor, under Title 44, this wasn't a technical, because the judge would find that amusing at best.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I never want to predict what somebody might argue in court. But I think the focus of this is so that, because there has been some research and analysis that's been done about technical violations versus substantive violations, and so there was a real interest in making sure that there was a consistent definition of technical violations going forward for the research and analysis.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair, this, you're saying that with
sexual analysis under number three, the middle, the third bullet down says identifying areas for improving efficiency and effectiveness of the criminal justice system. How do you do that without recommending something? In other words, you're identifying, is that something different than recommending? Go ahead.
Through the chair, Representative, the short answer is yes. That, I mean, a perfect example right now, I referenced in my opening remarks that the pretrial population had gone up over a 10-year period from about 20% to 28%. My understanding is that now we're kind of hovering in the 50% range of the prison population being pretrial. And we don't really, without making a recommendation, you could certainly look at ways to what are ways in which you could reduce the pretrial population. Whether the legislature chooses to do anything with that that's totally up to the legislature. But it would be a way of laying out, here's three different ways you could, they could have analysis of here three different ways to try to reduce the pretrial population. And that would be then for the legislature to figure out whether to do anything with it or not.
Representative Ortiz.
I can appreciate that. I just don't quite understand. Don't get me wrong. I think that the legislature, the administration, does need to continue to hear recommendations for improving the efficiency and effectiveness of the criminal justice system. I think that's something that I think people are interested in that. Who does not want to improve the efficiency and particularly the effectiveness of the criminal justice system? I think we all say, yeah, we need to do that. How do you do that without receiving information and, dare I say, recommendations for us to make change? I guess what I'm saying is, I think I'm just speaking off the cuff here, but I think just because the legislature didn't necessarily adopt or eventually moved away from the recommendations that were put forward to the legislature doesn't necessarily mean that those recommendations weren't sound and weren't based on data and weren't based on information. We just collectively chose to move away from that. But that doesn't mean that the function there is not necessary and that we shouldn't be hearing from voices that are reflecting data and reflecting objective information. So that's what I would say about that.
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz. I mean, a lot of ways I really agree with everything that you just said, but what I have seen as the ex officio member of the Criminal Justice Commission is that in large measure in recent years the legislature really isn't interested in hearing those recommendations. And I mean, there are times in which I'm not going to sugarcoat stuff. And so the way this is structured is if the legislature wants to, assuming this bill passes, and obviously that's a decision for the body, but if the bill passes and the legislature is looking at pretrial issue, said, this looks like a mess, what is your recommendation? I would fully expect the commission would be more than happy to give the legislature a recommendation, but I think this bill recognizes that the commission spent some time coming in and saying, here's what we think the legislature should do, and the legislature did some of those things and didn't do others of those things, but I think the perspective of the legislature is, don't come telling us what to do unless we ask. And so the purpose of this bill is to say, we're going to be there doing some of this research and analysis so that you don't just wake up one day and say, oh my God, we better get some more information. And there would certainly even be the ability to request information from the commission, even if not a recommendation, I mean, not from the legislature, but there was a member of the commission that had questions about House Bill 5, and that commission member asked the commission to ask some folks to do some research and present it to the commission, and they did, which didn't come with a recommendation, but it provided data and analysis about the impacts of the bill. And then there's a report that's available. And so that's a perfect example that if you have an entity that's actually there, you have the opportunity, the information's available, and it's not just kind of, oh, we ought to find something, and then you create another task force, and 2 years later you get information. You actually have more of an ability to be responsive.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will go to Representative Johnson and then Carpenter, and then we will have to adjourn for floor. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And my concern, you know, we look for ways to do things, do the right things, but a lot of times we duplicate. I think most of my constituents would be happy to see the Criminal Justice Commission sunset. But when we talk about reforming this into something different, I look at the University of Alaska Justice Center. If I might read their mission statement.
Yes.
UA Justice Center, established by the Alaska Legislature in 1975, has a mandate to provide statewide justice-related education, research, and service. The Justice Center is an interdisciplinary unit that provides undergraduate and professional education, conducts research in the areas of crime, law, and justice, and provides services to government units, justice agencies, and community organizations throughout urban and rural Alaska to promote a safe, healthy, and just society. And it sounds to me like what we're talking about here is very duplicative of what we already have set up at the University of Alaska. We have a fiscal note of $155,000. I guess I'm wondering, would it not make sense to actually support our Justice Center and provide an additional grant to them to maybe transition some of this analysis to their unit or to their organization? They've already got something in place to do this. And we have already established this as a legislature.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson. The question you ask is a good one. What we've learned through experience is that the UAA Justice Center and the Alaska Justice Information Center at the University of Alaska Anchorage, they actually have expertise in certain ways which is very complementary to some of the data and analysis that's done by the Alaska Judicial Council. But there's a lot of areas where there's not overlap, and so a lot of the research and analysis that's been done by the Criminal Justice Commission on these issues, the University of Alaska is actually not all that well organized to do the full range that we have done with the commission. And I think if you, Ms. DiPietro, who is available to answer questions and is scheduled for invited testimony, although I know we don't get to it today, I think she can explain more of that process. And the second part is that the membership on the commission is designed to be aware of more issues that are around in the community and areas of interest for research than you would get just from what happens at the university. The university has a lot of other irons in the fire in terms of the work they do, in terms of grants and stuff that may be unrelated to these areas. So the university is vital and a vital partner to the process. We probably have UAA folks on commission meetings. On almost every meeting, they have something to present.
Representative Johnson.
Just to follow up on that, I mean, it does say provide services to government units, justice agencies, and community organizations. So, I mean, it does sound like they have a connection into the communities.
Okay, thank you. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. I'll be as brief as I can. So, as I'm trying to kind of sum up what the problem is here, I just kind of wrote down, jotted down here, that the commission recommendations haven't been used, which led to commission stopping recommendations, providing recommendations. That's kind of where we're at. So I've got some questions to kind of help understand. Is it a lack of awareness on our part that there were recommendations made, or is it a lack of interest? Like, the legislature is not, like, my awareness on having to deal with criminal justice issues right now is on sexual assault and domestic violence. It's not on anything else. Several years ago, it was on the issues that Senate Bill 91 had. So the fact that there was a report generated in as late as 2018 or 2017, that there hasn't been a criminal justice reform push within the legislature since then. So I wouldn't have thought to ask for data, or, you know, that my constituents aren't asking for it. There's not a, so I don't know whether it's a lack of interest or potentially maybe it's a lack of trust. We saw what came out of that for Senate Bill 91, and maybe there are issues, but members cause. So, and I'll just finish my question by saying, what's kind of the cause of why that our policy decisions aren't rooted in the commission recommendations? Is it the structure, purpose, mission, sideboards, requirements of the organization? Or is it the makeup of the board? Or is it the members that actually sit in the seats? All of those could be true or...
So through the chair, Representative Carpenter, because you're now in your fourth year, I can tell you that in the first, this is my eighth year, and I can tell you that in the first 3 years that I was here when the reform efforts were going on, that the Criminal Justice Commission member chair was here all the time testifying to committees about their recommendations and the data underlying those. And so those recommendations and that data was an enormous part of the legislature's decision about how much or not to do in terms of justice reform. If you go and do a careful review of what the commission recommended and what the legislature enacted, you'll see that the commission wasn't in here with like a hammer saying, "You shall do X, Y, and Z." The legislature was regularly exercising its independent decision about what to do and what not to do. And there were some of the details of those recommendations the legislature did not follow, even in adopting Senate Bill 91. And then when the rollback or the repeal took place, a lot of those, and you were present for those, a lot of those recommendations, they really didn't consult the commission at all, and the commission was very non-present. And that was because I think the legislature's view was a lot of legislators thought they probably shouldn't have relied so much and they wanted to make their own decisions, so they weren't calling those folks out. It's interesting you note, though, in terms of areas of great concern to you is the sexual assault and domestic violence. And there are reports that have come from the Criminal Justice Committee. There's a 2019 sex offenses report that was delivered to the legislature, and we all received that. Now, how many, I think, on the Judiciary Committee, I think I had presentations on that report in 2019 when it came out, but I'm not sure a lot of other people had a lot of interest in it. It's a multi-page report, very, very detailed, has a tremendous amount of information. And then just this year, approved just a month or two ago, a domestic violence report. Again, it's a 50, 60, 70 page report. But it's a multi-page report. Tremendous amount of information about domestic violence in Alaska. And those are areas in which, again, not a lot of legislators, although it's been delivered to us, not a lot of legislators have picked it up. That's not because it isn't there. I can't really say why individual legislators don't pick it up. At some level, the commission's job is, if we're required to prepare an annual report, it prepares that. When we have reports, they get delivered to the legislature, but we can't force people to pick up. But it's very much present, and we've been talking about it in connection with House Bill 5, both those reports.
Representative Carpenter.
A lot of my questions probably should just be in a conversation offline about this. I guess the last follow-up that I would have would just be to kind of understand where the recommended changes in HB 183 came from. Are they recommendations from a Criminal Justice Commission, or are they from the sponsor, or from some other, where is that coming from?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, when the auditor's report came back, and you can see the communication that the commission had with the auditor in connection with the findings, and we agreed with the recommendation that it not continue its recommendation function. And I'm on the commission and serve as chair, so that's why you see me signing documents on behalf of the commission. We agreed with the recommendation of that we not make recommendations, but we thought, well, we should at least make a recommendation of what the data and analysis function looks like. And so the commission held, I want to say, 3 or 4 meetings and heard a lot of public testimony and a lot of input from a variety of stakeholders that have been interested in the work that the commission did. And so there were a number of recommendations. I'll just give you a couple of examples of those, because I know we've got time. The Attorney General's office actually said, it was Mr. Skidmore, and he said, well, this may seem odd, but I think the the membership on the commission should not be the Attorney General. It should be the Deputy Attorney General in charge of the criminal division, because 90% of the questions are always from the criminal division, and so you need to have the deputy in charge of that division, not the Attorney General. And everybody thought, yeah, that's a good idea. There was a lot of talk about police officer or law enforcement presence, because of course the Commissioner of Public Safety is on there, so you already have trooper presence, and there was a interest, how do you come up with having both an urban presence and a rural presence and phrase that in a way that gives flexibility for the appointment but doesn't be overly prescriptive. And so the language that's in there comes from those discussions about trying to have both a rural presence and an urban presence. And then I think a third part that was part of the recommendation was they wanted the commission to, as much as possible in our circumstances, to be less subject to kind of politicization by the executive branch. And so you'll see, for example, the law enforcement presence are appointed by the Association of Police Chiefs and not by the governor. The victim presence on the council is done by the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault after consultation with all of its members. The original version of the bill was, or the original draft of the bill was just the network on domestic violence would pick a person, and they talked with their members and no, we want to have a part of this. And so what it reflects is they actually have a duty to go back to their membership. But the idea would be that the membership of the commission would not be subject to executive appointment, but in fact you'd have a commission that had community presence and a variety of stakeholder interest that would be able to speak up and say, you know, we need to learn more about this.
Okay, we will have to. So final comment.
Very quickly, that was a long answer. The recommendations, HB 183 is the recommendations from the board, or from the commission, sorry.
Largely, one thing no one recommended was the person with lived experience. We had like 20 people say we need somebody with lived experience. Nobody recommended it. When I drafted the bill, I said we ought to have somebody with lived experience. Thank you.
And our apologies to our invited testifiers today. We will make sure to bring you back at a future meeting. This concludes our agenda for this morning. Our next meeting is this afternoon at 1:30. We will consider House Bill 413, Facilities Constituting a School, and House Bill 350, School Bond Debt Reimbursement. With that, at 9:59 a.m., we are adjourned. Thanks.